we now have, you know, you don't have to be Einstein, but you do, really, to understand anything that's going on, and we never will. But now there is a thing called Digital Einstein. Everything of Einstein's is now online, and there's a site for it. It's called Digital Einstein. You can look for it. And Dr. Kormos Buchwald is one of the people instrumental in putting all this online. It's amazing. His personal letters are in there, little notes to various, you know, women folk, and back again, because he was quite the guy. But it's, but and all his theories are on there, and everything that he published is on there. So you could actually try to figure out some of this stuff, which I've been doing, and I've really learned a great deal. Not about the subject at hand, because I don't know what he's talking about, but about the women that he knew quite a bit. And let's go on the phone right now with Dr. Kormos Buchwald. Hi, Diana, are you there?
Hi, good morning. Call me Diana.
Call you Diana. Thank you so
Otherwise,
much.
Otherwise, we'll end up with Molotov.
Yeah, and Molotov to you as well. And this is an amazing project. How did you get involved with it, with the Einstein Project?
Well, I'm a historian of science. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to become involved 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, we have marched ahead publishing Einstein's collected papers.
Collected papers.
Yes.
Is everything online now?
No, because Einstein wrote a lot and had a huge correspondence, and we have reached about his 44th birthday. So everything that we've published is online, but we're continuing to publish all his papers to the end of his life.
Yeah, and does this include private little notes and such, too?
It includes everything.
Everything.
Yep.
And the family was not, were they on board for all this? They must be.
They were when the project started. And
but now not so much, right?
I haven't heard anything.
Who do we have now that representing the Einsteins that are still living?
There are grandchildren all over the world.
Oh, all over the world.
Yes.
And they're okay with it? You haven't heard anything from any of them about some of the more personal things being revealed about their grandpa?
Well, actually, the most personal things were revealed in 1987 when the first volume was published.
Oh, okay.
And the news have a way of getting old.
Yeah.
So by now, many of the little problems in the family been revealed.
Yeah. Yeah. So
yes.
It's, the news gets old. That's a good thing to remember. We do have everything from his birth certificate, and he was born the same day I was, a different year.
Molotov.
Yeah, Molotov. Thank you. March the 14th, and I always thought that was significant, but it's not.
And, Pi Day.
Pardon me?
Pi Day.
He was born on a Friday?
No.
Oh, Pi Day. Oh, yes, Pi Day. I get that. Yeah. 3.14, yeah. For him, that's probably more significant than it's been for me so far.
Yeah, he loved geometry.
He loved geometry. So that's
and
possibly the reason there. And so we have the male child born at 14th of March, 1879, at half past 11 o'clock. Child of male sex, given the first name Albert, approved and signed by Hermann. Einstein, and registered on the 15th in Ulm. That's his hometown, right? Ulm.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was there only for a year.
Where did he go from Ulm? The family moved a lot, didn't they?
The family moved to Munich.
To Munich.
Bigger city, up and coming.
Mm-hmm.
Joining the Industrial Revolution, they were involved in electrotechnical industry. That was.
Well, yeah.
The dot-com boom. Of the late 1890s.
Yeah. His dad was in direct current, though. He picked the wrong current, right? This is like my dad. You know, everything I got into, he's just on the wrong end of the right idea, you know. Direct current, you thought was going to be the big deal, but it was alternating.
Yes. Well, it survived for quite a few more decades until Europe and the United States standardized electric transmission, yeah.
And we still have direct current and so forth, but it's not. It wasn't the big, you know. That's why he kept moving. It wasn't just, where did he go after Munich?
Well, his family moved to Italy, to northern Italy.
That's right.
So he spent most of his school years until almost his last year of high school in Munich.
In Munich, okay.
And that was his, yes. He didn't like school very much.
No. I have his report cards here, as a matter of fact. Let's see here. Oh, this is a heuristic point of view concerning the production and transformation of light.
Well, that's his big report card.
Yeah, no, that was a little bit later, actually. This is what he was, instead of studying, that's what, probably what he was doing, was working that out. It was a little more complicated. Where are the report cards? I got them here. Some of them are a bit surprising, because he didn't do too well in physics, I noticed, one semester. All right, here we got, I don't know what this is from here, but 1895-96.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see what he got here. Conduct was good. Only two absences. His German was good. Should be good. He's a German speaker. His Italian was, his Italian was better than his German. That's kind of interesting.
Actually, this is one of those myths about Einstein.
Yeah.
We have great difficulty dismantling.
Yeah.
That Einstein wasn't a good student. But when the first volume of the Collected Papers was published by John Spatula and his colleague, they showed that just before Einstein got his high school diploma, the grading system changed. So Einstein got very good grades.
Oh, they changed the grading system.
They changed the grading system, so he was in Switzerland.
Oh, yeah. But even relatively here now, in this report card here, look, you get as high as a six, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
I think five is usual, but a six is really extraordinary, which he did end up getting a six in arithmetic and algebra and geometry.
Mm-hmm.
But in physics, he got a 1 to 2. And that's for two quarters here. It looks like 1 to 2 and then 1 to 2. And but then in the third quarter, something happened.
Yes.
And he raised it to a six and five.
The grades changed.
That's when the grades changed.
Yes.
I know, but the other ones, they're all relative.
The poorest grades were in Italian and French because in Germany he had not studied those languages, whereas in Switzerland you have to have three languages, because it's a federation of various language-speaking populations. You had to study German, Italian, and French. And he only had a few months of Italian and French.
Yeah.
But he continued afterwards. For the rest of his life, he was quite fluent in both of those languages.
Yeah.
And we have letters in French. And he even gave lectures at the Collège de France in 1921 in French. And he wrote to his friend, "You will have to help me. I'm worried that I won't be able to talk about relativity as well as I would want to."
You know, the French, though, they probably were just laughing at him. You know, if you don't have the right perfect accent in France, you know, speaking, they probably, must have given him a hard time. But if we're looking here in 1896, by then, all his grades are like the highest grades already, so including artistic drawing, natural history, chemistry very high, physics very high, everything up there.
Mm-hmm.
Technical drawing was good, not great.
Yes.
And his French was a 3 instead of.
His French was not fantastic.
That right. But in Switzerland, apparently, he got all that together and got his. I'm looking through all the. A lot of report cards here. Amazing, very consistent. And it does dispel what you said, except in the beginning there, he had a problem in physics, which might have been. Because his mind was wandering about higher questions than the actual physics that was being portrayed in the classroom, don't you think?
Well, he was thinking about higher questions around that time already. He was wondering what it would be like to travel at the speed of light. What would one see?
Yeah.
He liked to ask himself these kinds of puzzling questions.
Yeah. So he's like the only student looking out the window all day, actually thinking about the speed of light. That's unique.
That's unique. But he was very lucky because he was at a very progressive school. So this last year was in a small, nice school with very few classmates, and he had a wonderful time there.
That in Switzerland? In was that in Zurich?
It was in Aargau, outside of Zurich.
Outside,
yeah.
And He wrote this. This is to Mileva. Is that was
yes.
That?
Yes, Mileva Marić. Yes.
That was his wife, right? He married her.
She first was his girlfriend, and then she was his wife.
Yeah, and then she was not either.
And then she was an ex-wife.
But here's this cute little letter. Dear D, whatever the D stands for. I bet you are surprised to see my hieroglyphics so soon again, knowing what a lazy letter writer I am. Here in paradise, I live in a very quiet, nice Philistine life with my mother, hen, and sister, exactly the way the pious and righteous of this world imagine paradise to be. Meanwhile, I have already studied quite a bit of Helmholtz on atmospheric movements. This is what you always write your right back home, you know. When you, out of fear of you and also for my own pleasure. Let me immediately add that I will reread the whole stuff with you. She was in the Helmholtz, and she was a physicist as well, right?
She was studying to be a math teacher, yes.
Yeah, to be a math teacher.
They were both studying to be science teachers.
Ah. Mm-hmm. Let me immediately add that I will reread the whole stuff with you. I admire the original free mind more and more. You, poor soul, must now stuff your head full of gray theory, but I know well both you and your divine composure and know that you'll accomplish all that is. All that with a calm mind. Besides, you are at home and are being thoroughly pampered as is proper for a little daughter. So they're kind of cute letters, at least in the beginning here. They seem to have a decent relationship in the beginning.
Yes, they were in love. They were very young. He was very young. And they were in love.
Yeah.
Yep. And These are rather sentimental letters.
Yeah, he's a nice letter. He actually reminds me of my dad used to write my mom little notes. He'd type them on the office typewriter. One was about a tough steak that she had served, and it was apologizing for the steak from the point of view of the steak itself. You know, typed on the office underwood, you know, to my mother. And I say I still have them. They're all so cute. They're the cutest little thing.
You should keep them.
Yeah.
We may have a digital Feldman edition.
That's the only good writing to come out of the family, though, was that steak. All right, and while all these things are going on, he's talking about the thermodynamic theory of the difference in potentials between metals and fully dissociated solutions of their salts and on an electrical method for investigating molecular forces. So he's still kind of doing, like, the electrical thing. Is that from the family influence there, or the direct current thing? Is that?
No, he's very much interested in what we call physical chemistry.
Okay.
So he's interested in how ions behave in solutions and how molecules behave either in the atmosphere or in solution.
Yeah.
That was also a pioneering field at the time.
Yeah. And that's really where he started making these amazing sort of, drawing these amazing conclusions and theories, right? It was in this field of particles in solution or?
Yes, some of that, and thermodynamics and statistical mechanics.
Yeah.
These were topics that he wasn't taught very much at university.
Mm-hmm.
And was exploring them on his own and was applying for jobs in that field.
Yeah.
The first job application that he wrote was to a famous physical chemist named Wilhelm Ostwald,
mm-hmm.
who had a huge laboratory in Leipzig. And Einstein had difficulty finding work after he finished college. And that was one of them. And even his father wrote a letter asking Ostwald to give him a job, but it didn't happen.
Trying to get him a job, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So the more things change, the more they don't, apparently. That's
one of the most interesting things that people can find in these volumes, is the difficulties of finding employment for young people in a new field, like theoretical physics, which wasn't very popular at the time.
Yeah, and even someone as brilliant as Einstein, if there were.
Even someone as brilliant as Einstein.
Yeah, if there were anyone else.
But he writes to Mileva, he says, I have firmly decided to find a job, any job, whatever, however humble it is.
Mm. So,
to support himself.
Yeah.
He couldn't get married without a position in those days.
Right.
Yeah.
And what was the first paper, or what I guess it would be a paper that brought him to the attention of other scientists in Europe?
Well, we think of the theory of special relativity. In 1905, we write a large number of papers.
That was the year. Right?
We only remember him for the 3-4 papers that he published in what we call the Miracle Year, or the Year of Wonder, 1905. But okay. He had already written many book reviews and article reviews until then. And he was very productive.
So Relativity, that was in 1905?
Relativity was all right, was an important paper, but he considered himself a quantum theory of light paper, the most important one. He described it as the most revolutionary paper. We have very few instances in which he talked about his own work.
Really?
But that's what we do have, yeah. And he was brought to the attention of people maybe a few years later at a scientific conference in 1909 where he made a very good impression.
He did.
But he was already 30 years old.
In 1905?
1909.
In 1909, he was 30.
Yeah.
So he was like 20, 25 when he came out with Relativity?
26, yep, 25, 26.
That's precocious.
It's precocious, yeah. By 40, he felt very old.
He did. Was his best work behind him at 40?
General Relativity. Some of his predictions had just been confirmed when Einstein was 40 in 1919. Mm-hmm. And that's when he wrote that, with fame, I become more and more stupid, which is, of course, a very common phenomenon. Yes, he felt that his mental processes had slowed down, but he felt by 40 old, yes.
Yes. And you know what's surprising in reading this, in reading his personal letters and reading, you know, trying to understand a little bit about what he was thinking about and what he was doing, and it's, which you can't really do, and you know, if you're me. But what a modern fellow he was.
Yes.
He seems quite contemporary, really. I mean, he's a genius, but, you know, he could be a genius now. No, he couldn't, because we don't have him anymore, apparently, but, you know. You know what I'm saying? He's a very modern, all those things
Absolutely.
That he's saying.
You know, yes. You have put your finger on one of the most interesting characteristics of Einstein. He was very modern in everything, in his way of life, in his career path. He was a man of the 20th century. In his writing style, in his personal demeanor, he was very unlike his professorial colleagues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he earned a living through his profession, which was also rare, until not long before that. Scientists were supposed to support themselves, to have money for their own labs, to be wealthy. Einstein was none of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That, when he became a celebrity, it probably was the in a way, like sort of the death knell of theory, wasn't it? I mean, that's also a modern problem, isn't it? Is celebrity status?
Yes. Absolutely. Celebrity status disturbed him in the beginning. Then he learned to live with it. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, he wrote, "This awareness of my limitations pervades me all the more keenly in recent times, since I see that my faculties are being quite particularly overrated. After a few consequences of the general theory of relativity stood the test." So
He thought he was being overrated?
Yeah. He tried to be funny and modest about it. Yeah. Some of his colleagues were displeased with his fame, and some of his colleagues were positively opposed the general theory of relativity. They thought that this fame was undeserved.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there were major meetings in Berlin against a scientific theory.
Oh. There was a lot going on in Berlin at that time as well.
But this is one of, yes.
Yes, one of those things.
Right.
And the celebrity status really started once he came to America, right? That's when the celebrity thing really
The celebrity thing starts at the end of 1919.
Oh, it does.
Yes, and he gets interviewed, and photographers are camping outside his home, and he writes to a friend that since the eclipse expedition, he has nightmares, that he's in hell, and the devil is throwing bags full of mail at him that he hasn't answered yet.
Yeah.
And, yes, he comes to the United States in spring of 1921, his first trip to America.
Yeah.
And becomes a famous face in newspapers,
yeah,
magazines.
The Prince of Princeton.
Well, that happens a little later, 12 years later, when he immigrates to America.
Yeah, yeah. And he eventually meets Marilyn Monroe, so the celebrity status peaks at that moment, I think.
I don't remember.
Or did he meet Marilyn? Maybe he didn't. Maybe that's that actually never happened. But is that, exactly, he was sort of like the Joe DiMaggio of physics at that point.
He was the old man of physics. He was treated as the old man of physics in Prince. He wasn't among the young quantum physicists. So that's why we have the image of the old Einstein so popular.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so now people like to talk about the very young Einstein and the very old Einstein.
But in between is pretty interesting, too. And it's all here, and it's all digital. And people can go, you can go on there now and search it, and you can learn all of, you can actually feel some of the things that he was feeling through the letters, and you can look at some of the ideas and kind of understand it. I don't get the math on some of these theories. In fact, I don't get anything out of them. But you do, because you're a scientist as well.
Yes, so, well, Einstein tried very hard to explain his work.
Yeah.
To the general public. He gave lots and lots of lectures. He didn't like to talk about physics to the general public, but he did. He learned. People were very eager. So it took him many, many hours to explain relativity.
Yeah.
He went to Japan and gave a tour of lectures. He would stand in a square and there would be 3,000 young men listening to him. He would talk for 10, 15 minutes, and then the translator would translate for 10, 15 minutes, and then he would talk for 10, 15 minutes. And these events lasted about 7 hours. It takes a long time.
Yeah. So he was a rock star.
He was a rock star.
Yeah, a rock star in physics. And an amazing man.
It's hard to imagine a scientist being that famous today.
Yeah. I don't think there is anyone that degree. It's great. I want to thank you so much for taking time to speak with us. And we should mention there are printed volumes that you can get, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And what is that series called?
It's the Collected Papers of Albert Einstein, published by Princeton University Press. And okay. Princeton University Press, great credit to have put these volumes up online for free, full text search.
Full text, and they're in German, and you got the
English translation.
English translation too.
And you can search for words such as truth and beauty and justice and symmetry.
And so they're searchable as well. All these
searchable,
amazing,
yes,
things from an amazing man. Thank you so much, Diana.
Thank you so much.
Great pleasure speaking with you.
Pleasure.
Dr. Diana Kramos Buchwald, and the digital Einstein.